Great to be back here. I was at the Texas LP convention. It was in Austin. That's all I remember. The years fade away, but I remember it was very pleasant. And so it's great to be here again. I guess I'm slated for a current affairs topic, and a lot of fantastic things happening in the world. Well, you wouldn't know it from the National Party. I'll get back to that a little later. What's happening in the world is that there's literally the... We're really living through what the historians call a revolutionary moment in history. It's like something like living through the French Revolution. And fortunately, we're living out of a fairly safe spot. But we can kind of watch it on TV, which is my favorite way of watching revolution. But what we're seeing is literally the collapse of the big movement of the 20th century, namely socialism. We're seeing the death of socialism. Death throes. And socialism was the big movement of the 20th century, the big ideological and political movement. And
all right, you guys.
What we're seeing at the end
a little
of
Murray Rothbard
century,
filler there for you. Technical problems at LRN. Oh, this one wasn't me. Anyway, welcome back to the show from last week. You want some more Rothbard here?
17th, going up to the 18th and 19th century, we had an upward march, not of course every day, but basically an upward march of freedom and the death of the old order, which was statism and serfdom and slavery and theocracy.
Yeah.
And
so that's Murray Rothbard, Mr. Libertarian. And that's a speech he gave at the Texas Libertarian Party Convention here in Austin, Texas in 1989. You can find the whole thing on YouTube if you want. Just type in Rothbard 1989. It's all about the collapse of Soviet communism and everything. Right? It's between the fall of the wall and the dissolution of the USSR. Very interesting speech there by the great Murray Rothbard. If you want to check that out. So, okay, anyway, yeah, I'm here. Hey, chat room guys, man, how the hell are you? Hey, everybody, guess what? The website is fixed, sorta. And you can get into the chat room. Actually, if you're an IRC free node type chat person with an external chatting application, then yeah, you could have got in there all along. But if you're like me and you just use a plain old browser window, then that was a problematic problem. But now it's fixed. So here I am. Hey, everybody. LRN issues. Oh, I'm told. Hey, Ian, if you're listening, chat room is saying they can only get the low bitrate stream right now. Maybe I'll call you back at the break and see if we can work that out. All right. Well, anyway, what a clumsy start to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, etc. Robert Pape is going to be on the show. He's the author of Dying to Win, The Strategic Logic of Suicide Terrorism, and also Cutting the Fuse, the sequel to it. He's got a piece out. I think I disagree with it. But anyway, it'll be an interesting conversation with the great Robert Pape. And then also on the show today, Con Hallinan, who wrote a recent thing about the Saudis, which, man, now that I think about it, I should have reread that this morning. I'll have to take another look at it during one of the breaks here today, if I can get around to it. But anyway, so that's Robert Pape and Con Hallinan. I did have an invite out to Giraldi and to Patrick Coburn, too. We'll see if we can hear back from either of them. Obviously, there's very much to discuss. So, man, I don't know. I'm sorry. I almost don't even know where to begin. I guess, you know, obviously, if I'm your only source of news, and I guess there are some people like that, then I should catch you up on the fact, in case you've been fishing all weekend, that apparently Islamic State recruited fighters did an attack in Paris. 6 different target sites, 8 different attackers apparently hit a restaurant, hit a concert, hit, you know, basic kind of low-level nightlife type targets, very soft targets, killed 129 people, injured many more than that. And one of them escaped, and the stupid idiot Keystone cops let him go. They questioned him at the border to Belgium and only later figured out, oh, that's the guy that we were looking for. Good work, guys. And anyway, Yeah, so it's a terrible attack, and all of the typical worst reactions that you could possibly expect have been coming out from all over everywhere. Although, you know, I have to admit, there's been a lot of thoughtful writing, too. I've seen a lot of people say, come on, man. And they're not using my exact language about history just began yesterday or whatever, but that's basically what they're saying is, come on, this has been going on. Even Peter Bergen from CNN, it's not good enough to run on antiwar.com or anything, but Peter Bergen on CNN says, stop being a baby, you know, stop being an orangutan and be a grown-up and admit that you know that France has been bombing Syria and Iraq in the coalition with America for a year and a half. You do know that. And especially they've stepped it up just in the last few weeks. So that doesn't say that it's okay. It just means that when the French say, oh, it's an act of war against us, they hate us because we're good and free, that no, it's an act of war because of your acts of war. See? Acts of war on one side, acts of war on the other side. Civilians killed, reactions provoked. So, anyway, Peter Bergen says, look, if you believe what Marco Rubio says about they hate us because how progressive we are on women's rights, then you're wrong and maybe really stupid to try to justify the U.S. government's existence in this reality in the way that you do. And anyway, so then here's the thing about that. Donald Trump said this morning on MSNBC, the front runner for the Republican Party presidential nomination, said, we're going to have to look at shutting down mosques in America. Trump says he would consider closing certain mosques. I would hate to do it, he said, but it's something that you're going to have to strongly consider, meaning him when he's the dictator. You know, and people talk about themselves in the second person. He said the government should increase surveillance in and around mosques, and Americans must reassess some of their civil liberties in this dangerous time. Are you ready for this? We have to be much tougher, Trump said. We are going to have to give up certain privileges that we've always had. Americans' right to associate for worship merely a privilege. Your right to your own religion? No such thing. Only what the government will suffer. That's what the First Amendment says. The government created you, and the government will allow you to do these things until it changes its mind. Right? Isn't that what it says in the First Amendment? It's funny, right? You're supposed to just think, don't worry, the courts will stop them, whatever, right? But this is where we're at, where someone running for president of the United States is saying he wants to close down. Might as well be saying synagogues or churches. He was quoted when talking about Carson a few weeks ago. He said, the Seventh-day Adventists, you know, I don't know about that. Me, I'm a Presbyterian. How do you like that, Seventh-day Adventists? Old Trump, he doesn't know about that. But I'll tell you what, and you already know this, everybody already knows this. If they can close down mosques, they can close down Seventh-day Adventist churches or anything else.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com.
All right, y'all. It's my show. I'm Scott Horton. You guys tell me if I'm on or not. Chat room, can anybody hear me? Boy, I guess I should have called Ian to make sure I'm on. It seems like maybe I'm not on. Hey, chat room guys, did you just hear the Spaceballs music and then me say the things I just said or not? I'm sure there must be a delay. Okay, number 6 can hear me, so I'm on. All right, on with the show for those who can hear it. All 2 of you. I'm going to pick on my friend's mom. But only because I really like her and she means well and I've known her for 25 years or something like that and 30. Maybe. How old am I? Jesus. Yeah, like 25 years. Anyway, so I saw her over the weekend. My friend and his mom was there. And she says, I say, we just bomb him. Just got to bomb. We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. We just got to bomb him. And the reason I'm picking on her for it is because she's a good person, man. She really is. She's a good lady. She's the salt of the earth. You couldn't find a nicer lady to be the mom of your friend. She's just some lady. She's got no education or special skills or any kind of thing. She's just a run-of-the-mill person. And she's just not exposed to any kind of other way of thinking about it. You just can't deal with these people. There's no way to deal with them. Just bomb them. But so what I says to her is, well, that's fun because Saddam Hussein used to be owned lock, stock, and barrel by Ronald Reagan for 8 years straight until George Bush Sr. stabbed him in the back. Remember that? Apparently, we can deal with these people. Sometimes, if we want to, instead of having a war, I'm not saying that America should have propped up Saddam Hussein, but it sure as hell could have tolerated his existence. And, anyway, she didn't have, like, a real coherent narrative. She's, you know, basically grasping at straws of what she's heard in the media kind of a thing. She's, well, they're picking these targets carefully. You know, they're attacking the Russians. They're attacking the French. I said, I know. You know, when the Russians started attacking, started bombing the Islamic State, the Americans said the Russians are going to get paid back with terrorist attacks for this. And then they did. And the Americans, the media, and the military guys, the National Security State guys said, see, this is what happens when Russia attacks the Islamic State, they get attacked back. Then the exact same thing happens in France. And we're supposed to say, no, it's only because they're good and pure and innocent and white and Christian. Come on. You know, just because their flag is red, white, and blue. Yeah, but Scott, our flag is red, white, and blue. Yeah, well, guess what? Russia's flag is red, white, and blue, too. Did you know that? The red, white, and blue colors of the flag don't change the fact that these are human beings fighting about politics on Earth. Of course they dress it up in religion. The same way George Bush and Barack Obama dress up their crusade in religion, too. That doesn't mean that's what it's about. That means that's how to get you to be stupid and fall for it. Oh, this is what my deity expects of me? Oh, okay, well, derp. Sign me up. Same as it has ever been. And so, no. Bombing them and bombing them and bombing them isn't going to solve this problem. And if you're really saying, no, just bomb them. Just finish this. What you're saying is genocide. What you're saying is do worse than Hitler times 1,000. 20 million, 30, 40 million dead? That's not enough to kill all the Muslims. You're going to kill all the Muslims. You're going to kill 1.5 billion people. You want to guarantee a clash of civilizations where the secular West and Islam just absolutely cannot coexist. Well, just keep doing what you're doing and keep pushing regular Muslims into the arms of the jihadists falling for your enemy's script. Hell, even if you're talking about, no, I'm just saying kill every last Arab, you're still talking about hundreds of millions of people. Hundreds of millions of innocent men, women, and children. But these are the kinds of slogans that regular Americans recite. Regular Joes, just kill them all. And the thing is, if you really thought through, you wouldn't really believe that. I argue with her a little bit. She doesn't really believe that. Come on. It's really okay to kill these people's grandmothers? To kill their little babies? They're barbarians when they cut the head off of one of our reporters, but we're not barbarians when we send $50 million airplanes to drop $500,000 bombs on a whole wedding party full of women and children, decapitating them, sometimes leaving nothing but their skull, sometimes not even that. That's high tech and modern and moral? To tear people's lives apart with fancy, expensive machines? Just because we're from the middle part of North America and they're not? It doesn't make sense when you argue it out loud. The people of France are victims, but the people of Beirut, whatever. Somebody would have bombed them sooner or later, right? Shrug. Same enemy. I was making fun of the American government last week on that one, on the Beirut bombing, where I had basically no time to cover it because of so many interviews lined up, and said, well, just remember, you're supposed to be on Al-Qaeda's side. When Al-Qaeda bombs Hezbollah, you're supposed to say, oh, good, the moderates are taking the fight to the extremists who threaten poor little Israel. It wasn't even Hezbollah, really. It was the Amal militia that attacked the U.S., Marines stationed on their territory in Lebanon in 1983, and it's been since then. Even if you wanted to conflate the Amal militia and Hezbollah then, fine, which is not the same thing, but anyway, that was in 1983. Al-Qaeda, the guys who came to the U.S. and killed 3,000 people. The Al-Qaeda guys fighting in Syria right now, all their leadership, virtually all their leadership, are veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq from Iraq War II, where they got tough fighting the American Army and Marine Corps to the cost of 4,500 on our side and tens of thousands on theirs. Hundreds of thousands. I mean, in direct battle, over 1 million people died ultimately from that war. But anyway, so that's the thing of it, man. It's just, I'm sorry, I hate saying this all the time because it's so redundant and stupid, but it's the truth. Just because you're from here doesn't mean your government isn't evil. Just because those people are from somewhere else doesn't mean that, you know, it's perfectly sinless and fine for your government to kill them. It's just not. And you know it's not, but sometimes we got to say these things out loud to get over what we've been taught, you know? But murder's murder. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel Lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. That's CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org.
Okay, guys. Sorry about all the technical issues. They're having a bit of an equipment malfunction at the Liberty Radio Network headquarters in New Hampshire today. But I'm getting some responses saying it's good enough for government work anyway. All right. Check this out. Brand new article at bostonglobe.com. It's by Robert Pape, the director of the University of Chicago's Project on Security and Terrorism. And he's the author of the book Dying to Win, The Strategic Logic of Suicide Terrorism, and then the sequel Cutting the Fuse, The Explosion of Global Suicide Terrorism and How to Stop It. Welcome back to the show, Bob. How are you doing?
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Very good to have you here. And I should let the people know very briefly and over simply, I'm sure, that you run a database of all the suicide terrorist attacks that you can find from 1980 on in a social science-y kind of a way, looking for all the parallels and common denominators and useful lessons in a way that could be beneficial for protecting Americans from terrorism. But and I guess maybe we can get back to that here in a minute. But first, let's start with your article here. Or you can clarify what I just said if you'd like as well in your answer. Or go ahead.
I was just going to say, thanks for giving me credit, but I also want to give credit to the 30 researchers who work with me to put that database together and keep it up to date as of the last 2 months.
Okay, great. And yeah, I was going to ask, are you still doing it? And yeah, very good. And yes, much credit to all your help on that. Okay, so now this is, why Paris? The answer can be found in Syria and Iraq. And I'm not certain I agree with you on this, Bob, but I sure do want to give you a chance to state your case first, at least.
Sure. ISIS itself was formed as it's a phenomenon that was caused over 10 years ago by the U.S. invasion of Iraq. What happened in 2003 is that Iraq had no terrorist groups. There were actually no active groups in Syria either of any note. When we invaded and conquered Iraq, we toppled Saddam and created an anarchy. It created an anarchy, especially in the Sunni parts of Iraq, which are in the western parts of Iraq, a space that's ungoverned to this day. Then that spawned the terrorist group called AQI, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And then over the last 10 years, that has morphed into ISIS. Syria got involved because a few years ago, we had the Arab Spring, and that created a revolt in Syria, which is right next to Iraq. And so what ISIS is now the bigger, larger group of essentially Sunnis in Iraq and Syria who have actually asked for help from foreign fighters who have been flooding into Iraq and Syria to fight with ISIS.
Okay, so now in this article, you're saying that the reason that the Islamic State is lashing out at the Europeans right now is because they're suffering major setbacks in former Western Iraq and Eastern Syria.
So a year ago, ISIS took Mosul, which is a big city in Western Iraq, and that created a great threat to Baghdad and Erbil, which Erbil is the Kurdish area to the northeast, in the northeast of Iraq. What the West did, the United States assembled an international coalition. It included the United States, France, Britain, later Turkey joined to work with local groups in Iraq and Syria, especially the Kurds, and then the Shia-dominated Iraqi government, to first contain the group and then roll back its territory. And over the last, especially 9 months, ISIS has lost 10% of its territory. So it's not just that the momentum has been reversed. It's not just been contained. It's been shrinking, losing ground in Iraq and Syria. And as a result of losing ground, it's now lashing back. It's lashing out at the major military states that have been part of the coalition to shrink the territory of ISIS, and that's what we see. It started, actually, this lashing out about 6 weeks ago. The first major spectacular attack was in Ankara in Turkey on October 10th. That was a suicide, set of suicide bombings that killed 95 Turkish civilians. Then on October 31st, they attacked Russia, the Russian plane, and brought down that plane, killing 224 Russians, because in the meantime, Russia has joined in attacks against ISIS. And even though not in concert with the Americans or the West, it does pose a real threat to ISIS. And now ISIS is attacking Paris, one of the major powers in the international coalition against it.
Right. Okay. So here's the thing. Obviously, you're clearly right about the pressure that's being put on the Islamic State in terms of American and combined allied and Russian air power in Syria and in Iraq, backing up the Shiite militias and what's left of the so-called Iraqi army there. But they've taken Ramadi and they've taken Palmyra. And where they've lost Kobani, they seem to have major successes in other places. And the Iranian and American-backed Shiite militias can't seem to do a damn thing about Ramadi, Fallujah, or Mosul, or for that matter, the Iraqi Kurds, Peshmerga.
Yeah, Scott, you're right that this hasn't been a one-way street. You're right that there's an ebb and a flow. And this is where maps are really helpful, and I find it really hard to but if any of your listeners would go to a map and see where Ramadi is, you would see that what's been happening in the last year is that ISIS's perimeter has been shrinking. They've made some small gains inside of that perimeter to kind of consolidate a piece here or there. But just since October, the international coalition has launched a new wave of multi-prong offensives against the group just since October. One of the prongs is against Ramadi. Another is coming down from Sinjar, which is coming down from the northeast of Iraq. Ramadi is to the west of Baghdad. And then another is coming down from Syria near the border near Kobani toward Raqqa. And then in addition, of course, the Russians have come in from the west, closer to Damascus, threatening ISIS from yet another axis. So you're quite right that there's been ebb and flow, and you're right that there's been some gains for ISIS. But overall, ISIS is losing, and that's what's causing it to spend enormous effort it was not spending before. So in the last year and a half, ISIS has done many suicide attacks, over 600 suicide attacks, 600, you hear me, suicide attacks in Iraq and Syria, many of them coordinated what's called a complex attack against multiple aim points. They haven't done anything like that in the West until the last couple months. What's really changed is that ISIS is now devoting tremendous effort to attack Ankara, to attack the Russians, to attack in Paris, and I'm afraid we would have to expect the United States, I'm sure they're making great efforts to do that as well. And that is a really big change, and it means that they are now devoting enormous effort, whereas before they were essentially putting out emails and calling for lone wolves to attack small numbers of people. So it's not that ISIS never attacked us in the last year. It's that they'd send out a tweet and they'd say, please go attack the United States.
Right.
And you'd get one or two lone wolves to basically on their own become self-radicalized.
Well, and there was the Charlie Hebdo, and there was the attack on I forgot if it was a synagogue or some Jewish institution in Brussels there too. And that was some, anyway, we got to take this break. We'll be right back with Robert Pape in just a sec, y'all. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
Oy, finally. Sorry, y'all. I know those commercial breaks are intolerably long. It is what it is. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yes, technical problems with my website, technical problems with the LRN feed. I don't know. We're trying to get by. Talking with Bob Pape. He's the author of this article in the Boston Globe, Why Paris? The Answer Can Be Found in Syria and Iraq. And, of course, he's the author of Dying to Win and Cutting the Fuse, social science books about the origins of suicide terrorism and what all to do about it, et cetera, et cetera. So now here's where I think I want to come at you almost 100%, Bob. You're saying that the Islamic State is suffering major losses because of the various countries attacking them, and so they're lashing out at the Russians, at the French. They would hit us if they could in order to get us to stop attacking them. And I think that that's at best not even really half true in the same sense as September 11th, that the a welcome from the point of view of the terrorists, a welcome response by the Americans to September 11th would have been, well, geez, that's what it feels like. I best we better quit being an empire now and leave them alone. But that's not what they thought would happen. And that's not what they were trying to get to happen, really. They might have been pleased by that. But what they were banking on was provoking a reaction, an overreaction, and tricking the stupid Americans into driving themselves off the cliff, inflicting damage on ourselves that we could, that they cannot possibly do to us. And it seems like in that very same sense, the Bin Ladenites of the Islamic State, they need war with us. And now being bombed from the air, I could see that being very frustrating. Seems to me like rather than trying to scare us away, they're trying to provoke invasion. They want a big battle at the beak so they can pretend this is all magical and all destined to happen. And look, it's the American Christian and European Christians, the Israeli Jews and the Iranian Shiites all against us. And that's their narrative that they're trying to push and trying to get us to overreact and play the same script. And so what do you think of that?
So, Scott, I agree with you, and I think maybe you're not quite seeing how much that's part of what I'm saying. So I'm not doubting at all they want us to overreact, and I don't think we should overreact. What I'm saying is that when these groups are losing ground, they're looking for a game changer. And they need a game changer because they're mainly trying to establish de facto sovereignty. That's what they mean by a caliphate in very specific areas of the world. When they're losing ground, they want a game changer. Well, that's actually what Bin Laden wanted too. It wasn't so much he was losing. He couldn't get anywhere because he only had 300 guys. So what Bin Laden did was he attacked us on 9/11, hoping we would overreact and send an army into Afghanistan. Well, actually, we didn't. We reacted in a limited way in Afghanistan, which was, I think, the right move. Then we blew it, and then we overreacted in a place Bin Laden didn't think we would, which was Iraq. And that is what led to all the recruits that for all the anti-American and anti-Western terrorism that Bin Laden couldn't drum up with his statements. I think ISIS, we don't have the details yet with Bin Laden. We actually have some evidence to show that's true. With ISIS, they may want exactly the same thing. They may be wanting to provoke us into sending 50,000 or 100,000 ground troops into Iraq and Syria so that they can mobilize many more people against us. And the reason they need those more people to be mobilized is because they're losing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, war is the health of the Islamic State just as any other state. I mean, unless they lose completely. But then
So the right move here, which, by the way, so far, even with all the pressure, Obama's, pursuing, I think, the best course. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Democrat. I'm actually a Republican. The fact is what What's happening is that we are responding in a limited, determined way to continue to the strategy that's winning. And I think it would be a gross mistake to overreact and send any large number of ground forces in, because what that's going to do is help the terrorists recruit like crazy. And that's what they need right now, because the current set of fighters just isn't enough to hold the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think there's a real problem here, Bob, that has, I think, maybe even been underestimated by the president's most right-wing critics, on security and this and that. And that is the fact that at present you and I are living in the future compared to the years that anti-war people have been warning that America, its NATO and GCC allies have been backing the Sunni-based insurgency from Iraq War II, including al-Qaeda in Iraq, in Syria, since 2011. And there are uncounted thousands of Europeans and at least dozens or scores or maybe more Americans that have gone to Syria to fight. And our governments have said, geez, we haven't really been keeping track of all these guys. The FBI said, we don't have a folder full of, you know, all the Americans who went to Turkey to go fight in Syria or anything like that. Geez, you think we should start looking into it? Because our government's been pushing, both sides, Republican and Democrat, have been pushing the theory that, oh, no, we're just backing the mythical moderates and all of this stuff this whole time, and that these are the good guys. And so we could have, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to sound like a Glenn Beck alarmist crazy or whatever, but why should we believe there are less than scores or even hundreds of sleeper Islamic State or al-Nusra terrorists embedded with the refugees, fleeing to Europe for a better life, only to wait to do attacks just like what happened in Paris? It seemed like this cow is way out of the barn right now. You know what I mean?
Well, it is. It seems like it's out of the barn, and then therefore what we should do is just have conscription and raise a couple million men in arms to occupy Yemen and Saudi Arabia and Iraq and maybe parts of Iran. That is just exactly what the terrorists would love to hear. And they'd love to see us try to do that, because that is really what they're hoping for, is a way to really mobilize people in the region for their cause. And it would be a big mistake. Now, let's just also, though, be honest. There does appear to be, of the eight attackers in Paris, it looks like one had help from at least a Syrian refugee, maybe not consciously, maybe the passport was stolen. We still don't quite know the details on that. But what we do know is that the Paris attacks were planned in Syria. They look like they were orchestrated from Belgium and then had some help from French Muslims. So to the extent that the refugees were involved, they look like it was really a very, very minor, which I don't want to say means we should, you know, ignore that. So I don't want to ignore it. But at the same time, it would be a gross overreading to think that, oh, if France and Western Europe had never admitted a Syrian refugee, Paris would be safe. That's just not the case.
Right.
The problem we face here is that, and then again, this really it goes back 10 plus years. The problem is, when we broke Iraq, we created an anarchy. That anarchy has been spreading, and that is the cauldron which is producing all of the this hornet's nest of terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to deal with this issue. We can't just ignore it. And I think it means very limited use of military, along with economic and political tools, which is the direction, by the way, that the United States has been moving. And this won't solve the problem overnight. This is a problem that was caused by breaking Iraq into pieces, and I'm afraid it's going to be many years before we actually reach anything like an end to the anarchy that we triggered.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I know you're an academic and not an ideology guy, but I want to make the practical case for the U.S. government just withdrawing from the Middle East forever here, because the opposite of that, what you're saying, diplomatic tools, slight military here, there, careful cooperation, this kind of thing. In other words, the government acting like you imagine it ought to act kind of thing is impossible when what we're talking about is, you know, the previous government, the Bush administration, as you said, created this mess in the first place. The present administration has made it that much worse by backing the rebellion in Syria all these years. And then these are the same men that you're saying we need to hire to solve the problem. Or if not them, I guess it's going to be Hillary or Jeb or Trump. The same people who got us into this mess are going to be the ones to figure out this very careful mathematical solution to the problem. Just one last real good intervention in a very careful way, and then maybe we could quit. And I, what about if we just quit now?
First of all, I certainly understand the frustration. And if this were in South America, if this were in Latin America, if this were in parts of Africa, the idea of just simply walking away altogether would be all too reasonable. The reason that we're committed to the Persian Gulf is because of the West's commitment to access for oil. I don't mean money for the oil companies. That's another issue. I mean that the world's economy turns on the Persian Gulf. Now, not as much as it did 15 years ago, to be sure, but it is still the case that if we lost access to the Persian Gulf oil, our economy would be worse than the Great Depression of the 1930s. And that would produce all kinds of ugly domestic politics that we haven't seen here in a long time. So the reason to try to walk this tightrope, and which I agree, very difficult, no doubt, is because there isn't this perfect solution. Just as trying to go in with 150,000 men didn't solve the problem, because just using a bunch of military force isn't going to solve it, walking away completely isn't going to solve it either. What we need to do is we need to walk this tightrope of a middle course, and I think that this has been made worse by heavy military intervention. So what I would say is we shouldn't walk away, but neither should we succumb to calls for heavy military intervention, which will just make the matter worse.
All right. Thanks very much for your time, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Scott.
Great to talk to you again.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, y'all. That is Robert A. Pape. He is a professor at the University of Chicago. He's the author of Dying to Win and Cutting the Fuse, both of which are extremely valuable. I do hope you'll read them. And this piece is at the Boston Globe. Why Paris? The answer can be found in Syria and Iraq. Hey, Al Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. And they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Robertson at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday. And The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. If anybody can hear me, I don't know, man. I know LRN's having some problems today on both ends. Oh, well. I'll just keep recording as though I think maybe I'm live to some people. Chat room guys, can anybody hear me? Somebody say to me, yes, Scott Horton, we can hear you talking now. I know it'll be on a delay, but, you know, keep looking. Andrew's quit. He's gone. All right. Well, anyway, you could tweet me too if you're not in the chat room. Send me a tweet. I can hear you. Send me an email. I admit I'm very frustrated by the reaction to the Paris attack. Man, Maybe we should finally start fighting over there, huh, everybody? Everybody seems to say. There you go. I don't know if you heard it. Robert Pape agreed with me that, yeah, they're trying to get us to escalate. They're trying to get us to invade, to make them seem right. I told him, I think I disagree with your article, because this is what I think. And he said, I think you misunderstood my article, because that's what I think too. All right. Well, there's Bob Pape for you. Brilliant guy. Agrees with me. So here's the thing about it. If America and Russia and France and Britain all join up with Assad and Hezbollah and Iran in order to crush the Islamic State, and the Kurds, then what? War between the Turks and the Kurds? Who's going to rule former Iraqi and former Syrian Sunnistan, if not the Islamic State? You gonna make Iraq whole again because you're just gonna pressure the Baghdad government to go ahead and get along and share the wealth and forget the last 15 years of civil war never happened? There's no such thing as Iraq anymore. There's not going to be. When people say Iraq now, what they mean is Iraqi Shiistan from Baghdad down to Kuwait. And in alliance with Kurdistan, which has ultimate autonomy, if not, you know, complete independence. Who's going to rule Mosul? Who's going to rule Ramadi and Fallujah? Who's going to stay there to keep Al-Qaeda in Iraq from ever emerging again? Who? The Americans? You know, I saw, you can hear critics from all sides saying, look, all Obama has to do is send in some troops there and win. The Islamic State. They're a bunch of wimps. Eric Margolyes said on the show, hey man, the Turkish police could take out the Islamic State. But the Army and Marine Corps couldn't get rid of them. They fought a civil war for the Shiite side in Iraq War II for 5 years straight. And the only victory that Bush ever got over the terrorists was when David Petraeus defeated the president and went to the president's Oval Office and said, Mr. President, we are not going to defeat the Sunni insurgency. We are going to negotiate with them. That's my offer. Take it or leave it. And Bush said, well, okay, I guess. Save my ass somehow. And so Petraeus negotiated with the Sunni insurgency and bribed them with tons of money and huge promises about how America swore before the Almighty God that all three major monotheistic religions believe in, America was going to make sure to integrate them real good into the new Iraqi democratic system so that they wouldn't have anything to fight about anymore. Remember the benchmarks for the surge? We're going to create enough peace that then the different political factions can work out their differences and sames through the democratic parliamentary process. After helping the majority, the supermajority population of the country and their Iranian major power next door backed factions, after giving them total victory over the capital city, kicking all the Sunnis out and giving them, taking away their very last reasons that they ever had to bargain with the Sunnis. The surge worked. The surge worked. The surge worked at getting you to repeat a slogan over and over again. It did not succeed in achieving any of the so-called benchmarks. So, America and Russia, Iran and Syria and Hezbollah, America and Russia, America and NATO join the Russian-Iranian Shiite Crescent Axis. We crush the Islamic State, and then what? And then what are all our Sunni allies going to do about it? What are the Turks going to do when we empower the Iranians and the Russians and Assad? What are the Saudis going to do? America's been on both sides of this war for too long, guys. You see how full of contradictions it all is. And I don't know. I think also the leadership of the Islamic State seems to be true believers enough that they don't really care if they die. You know, like Michael Shore used to say about bin Laden, you can be cynical about the guy all you want, but you're basically wrong. The guy's an evil murderer, no doubt about that. But he's a warrior. He's been wounded three times in battle. He sleeps on the floor of the cave with his lowest of men. He doesn't prance around like fancy billionaire boy. And that's why he has the allegiance of the people who ally themselves with him. Same kind of thing here. I'd be willing to bet, can't say I really know, that Baghdadi and the leadership of the Islamic State, they don't mind dying. As long as the project rolls on. And then here's your extra painful, ironical sort of point too, which is that if America does go in there and defeat the Islamic State, then they only prove Zawahiri and Al-Qaeda correct. That you can't create a caliphate until you get rid of the Americans first. And that's why to attack the far enemy, the Americans, to lure them in. Remember, Zawahiri complained when the Shia told the Americans, thanks for giving us the capital city, now get the F out. And George Bush got down on his knees and said, yes, master, to Ayatollah Sistani. And agreed and signed on the bottom line, time to leave. The Al-Qaeda guy said, no, we didn't want them to go until they'd spent far more trillions than this, until they lost hundreds of thousands of men in battle. They're leaving at 4,500 dead? Well, that just guarantees they'll be back. And we want them to stay until they bleed all the way to bankruptcy and then kick them out entirely. Like the Soviets out of Afghanistan. Break the empire. Get rid of the empire. Only then can the local Islamist insurgencies be successful. So, you know, Bush's failure and Obama's success in following through with Bush's failure in getting the American military out of Iraq was exactly what to do, in the sense that it's exactly what the Al-Qaeda guys did not want. And in this case, if we go in there and reinvade, they'll be happy we're there, wasting more money, bleeding to bankruptcy, accomplishing their mission, but also proving that Zawahiri was right all along. There's no point in being Egyptian Islamic Jihad, because they ain't going to get you anywhere, because the Americans will always make sure that the Egyptian military kills you. So, might as well join up with Al-Qaeda and attack the Americans first. You know, that's the same argument we're going to have in 2 or 3 years. I'm going to say, see, I told you, they're just proving Al-Qaeda right about us and getting us attacked even more than before. In order to try to lure us in even more than before. Under the Chelsea Clinton administration, in 20 years, I'll be saying the same damn thing. Her and George P. Bush will be running on the same ticket together by then. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, all, Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Of course, aside from all the war and everything that, all the explosions still to come over there in the Middle East, in the name of reaction to this latest attack in Paris, etc., There's also the other horrible effects that we suffer here at home, including the loss of liberties. Donald Trump out in the lead today saying it's time to start closing down mosques. A lot of the right not far behind him. And you know, the thing of it is come on, guys. You're serving your enemies here. Is that really so hard to understand? You know, these guys published a thing not long ago where they approvingly quote George W. Bush saying, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorists." And they're saying, yeah, that's exactly right. It's us versus them. And there's no room for us in their society. In the West. They're all going to betray you. They all secretly hate you. They're going to stab you in the back and get rid of you. They're going to make it illegal for you to worship your God. That's what Al-Qaeda wants Western Muslims to believe. And so the American right click their heels, fall right in line like the last generation straight, basically, in accomplishing the enemy's goals for them. And there's no reason in the world why any right-winger, for whatever stupid emotional reason, so-called patriotism, that it should be impossible for them to just admit that this is all Bill Clinton's fault. Are you kidding me? I mean, I'm sparing your tiny little conservative feelings by not mentioning Bush Sr. But how about Bill Clinton bombed from the air for 8 years, bombed Iraq, and blockaded them to death, starved a million people to death, deprived a million people to death, half of them children. His Secretary of State smugly said on TV, yeah, whatever, it's worth it. However many children have to die so that one day their parents will be mad enough at us to overthrow Saddam or something, whatever, it doesn't have to make sense, just keep going. And that they were doing it all from bases on the Arabian Peninsula, the holy land of Mecca and Medina, where guess what? White Christian soldiers who don't even speak the language or anything aren't welcome. It's all Bill Clinton's fault. That's not America's fault. It's Bill Clinton's fault. That's why Al-Qaeda attacked us. You know that the 1990s existed, the 20th century existed. Many of you can remember it. Oh yeah, the 20th century, that did exist. Yeah, uh-huh. And so see, it never was Islam makes them hate and attack people for being innocent and good and free and ironically liberal and progressive on women's rights issues. Libertarian, if you will. That was never what it was about. So, closing down a mosque or just vilifying Islam, the religion in general, is missing the target by a long way. The only thing that Islam has to do with it is solidarity, identification. People seeing the victims on the other side as more like them than the perpetrators on this side. And I mean this side in the very general sense, the entire West in this terror war. That's how this started. You know, when George H.W. Bush, I'm sorry, conservatives, which he was a liberal Rockefeller Republican anyway, but not like you care. He is a Republican, so you worship him. But anyway, when Bill Clinton, that devil, and I'm not saying that sarcastically, when that lowlife Bill Clinton was strangling Iraq from Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda was just a few dozen guys. At its height, after Bill Clinton bombed them and missed in Afghanistan, in 1998, their ranks swelled to approximately 200 or 300 guys. Did you hear Robert Pate, the expert, say in 2001 there were just 200 or 300 guys? I know I'm repeating myself, but I like the analogy. You couldn't fill a pirate ship with them. An old 18th century pirate ship. And then, as Pape said, own goal in the hugest way. Because, hey, we're America. We got the most powerful military. We're the superpower. We can do whatever we want. And terrorism, 9/11 notwithstanding, isn't even really a concern. We can just do what we want anyway. And what are they going to do about it? Nothing. We got the army. You kidding? So, whether the Iraq war is going to be good for terrorism or not, irrelevant. Nobody can stop us. We're number one. That made it this way. And then Obama. Man, Obama. He didn't have to support Al-Qaeda in Libya in 2011. You know, he kills bin Laden, and at the exact same moment, basically, he aligns the United States with the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and Ansar al-Sharia in Libya, and then turns right around and helps them in their invasion of Syria as well. He takes the side of, and I've been saying this on the show the whole time, I've been interviewing the best journalists on this the whole time, from the very get-go of the whole thing, backing the Sunni-based insurgency from Iraq War II in Syria against Assad, the Shiite-backed, secular, fascist government that used to work for Bill Clinton and George W. Bush torturing people. That's another way that Bill Clinton got us attacked, backing torture dictators like Assad and Bush and that's a different torture dictator, sorry, Assad and Mubarak, etc. King Fahd. But anyway, Obama approved Kissinger's maximum. No, it's just a maxim. Sorry, I do that typing sometimes too. Different words start the same and I finish it the wrong way. Kissinger's maxim. If you're America's enemy, at least you know where you stand. There's nothing worse than being our friend. Because you're going to die, but you don't know when. You're going to put the knife in your back. That's the American way. And anyway, so I'm sorry I'm off my point. My real point is, it ain't Islam. It ain't Islam. And so not only are you missing the target about what the problem is here, and not only are you empower, and I'm addressing the American right wing that falls for the demagogues on this issue, not only are you empowering your enemies, because this is what they want you to think in order to make life for Western Muslims worse so that they will seem right. But I forgot what my third thing was going to be because I heard the music start playing, got distracted, and got to go anyway. The other thing was I was going to go on about anti-Muslim bigotry in America and how harmful that is to religious freedom, etc., but I guess I already talked about that, so whatever.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime future freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at Patreon.com/ScottHortonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottHortonShow. And thanks, y'all.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Yeah, again, sorry for all the technical difficulties. The ones at my site are pretty much almost all the way ironed out, I think. The ones at LRN, I don't know, man. They're working on it. Anyway, on to our next guest. It's our friend Con Hallinan from Dispatches from the Edge blog.wordpress.com and Foreign Policy in Focus, FPIF.org, Foreign Policy in Focus, where his most recent piece is The Saudis Are Stumbling and They May Take the Middle East With Them. Welcome back, Con. How are you?
Good to be with you, Scott. Fine.
Good, good. Very happy to have you here. And now, obviously, this article was hammered out before the Paris attack.
Right.
And I'm sure you'll probably would appreciate a chance to address that first. So I'll just ask you what you think is most important for people to understand from your point of view about the Paris attack, what it means, what it ought to mean to them.
Well, I think the key thing here is to see that the current approach to suppressing terrorism, which is really just a military response, it's not working. It's not what terrorism is. You can't treat terrorism as if you're fighting a foreign army, because terrorism is a tactic. It's not an entity. It's not a specific body, although the Islamic State probably comes closest to being a state than anything else out there. But I think the conclusions that people need to draw is that there are consequences when you do things like invade Iraq or get involved in the Syrian civil war. What you do is that you create conditions that encourage the growth of terrorist organizations. I mean, the Islamic State, which is the group that pulled off the attacks in Paris, is a direct result of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. The Islamic State sort of transformed itself from al-Qaeda in Iraq first to a subsection of al-Qaeda, and then they broke loose from al-Qaeda and became the Islamic State. And now they're sort of locked horns with al-Qaeda in Syria. And it was a direct result of the invasion. The overthrow of Gaddafi without something in place to take over. Much of the armament, as Seymour Hersh has demonstrated in his article in the London Literary Review, much of the weaponry and everything was shipped from the massive arms depots in Libya to fund the people fighting the Assad government, and a lot of those people are Islamic fundamentalists. And the same thing goes for, we're talking about Saudi Arabia. I mean, Saudi Arabia is funding all of these extremist Wahhabist, Salafist Islamic groups, and those are the conditions in which terrorism gets bred. It's not like the Saudis are funding the Islamic State. They're not. Matter of fact, the Islamic State is after them. But what they do is they pour that money and they pour those armaments in, and people get it, and they switch sides, and they change politics and everything like that, and they create this horrible civil war situation, and that's where terrorism grows up. So I hope that the conclusion that's going to be drawn from here is that it's really important for the major powers in France and Britain and the United States and Russia to step back a little bit and recognize that a sort of a military response to what is essentially a political question is sort of doomed to fail. It's never worked. Mm-hmm. I completely understand the French bombing the IS in Syria. I mean,
before or after the recent attack?
I mean, yeah, you know, after. I mean, you know, of course, you know, it's a horrible massacre and a terrible thing inflicted on the French people. And you can understand the anger and things like that. But in the long run, you know, those bombs end up killing civilians, and then the Islamic State or al-Qaeda, whatever group, you know, comes along and says, see, you know, it's the Crusaders are once again killing Muslims, and people say, yeah, they really don't like that, and suddenly you've got recruits.
Well, the French have been bombing the Islamic State for a year and a half, along with the Americans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, not very much, and they've been bombing it mainly in Iraq.
And in the last month, they have. Yeah, but there is no Iraq. It's the Islamic State.
Right.
That's the thing.
I mean, you're right. The border that was established in 1916 by the great colonial powers has essentially been forcibly
and certainly from
dissolved.
The point of view of the leaders of the Islamic State, bombing them in Mosul is not different from bombing them in Raqqa.
No,
you know,
No, yeah. No, no. I mean, in terms of, I'm not saying,
in case right wingers are listening, I'm not saying the French deserve it or whatever. I'm just saying you put in French airstrikes in Google News and they'll be pulling up article after article after article that all were written long before the recent massacre in Paris.
No question. I mean, the fact is, look, the French have been deeply involved in the effort to overthrow the Assad government in Syria. And France was their former colonial masters, and they've kind of never forgiven the Syrians for breaking loose. And they've been doing this, and this vacuum, which has now been created in Syria and northern Iraq, you know, the French bear some responsibility for that. And as horrible, for instance, as the bombing was in Paris, at the same time, there was a terrible bombing carried out by the Islamic State in Lebanon, in Beirut. Its targets were the Shiites, mostly Hezbollah supporters. Well, you know, that didn't get any press. There were no flags lowered for half-mast for that. And people pay attention to that. In fact, that's all over the internet. I mean, a lot of people in Lebanon saying, well, you know, where are the demonstrations for us? Where were the lowered flags for us? Our lives are not as important as the people in Paris. Now, I don't entirely agree with that, but if people draw that conclusion, you can't blame them. And this approach that the way you deal with political difficulties or political disagreements is that you resort to military force is just simply out of date. It doesn't work. I mean, take a look at it. Ever since the first interventions, going back to Afghanistan, you know, then Iraq, then Libya, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, you know, you just going to go through this whole string of things, and they've all been a disaster.
I mean, it's true. The best victory they ever got against the Sunni insurgency in Iraq was when Petraeus negotiated with them. And if he won a victory over anyone, it was George Bush. He told Bush, we're not going to win against these guys. We're going to sit at a table with them or I quit. And Bush said, okay, go ahead and deal with them then.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And then, but here's the thing, though. The worst own goal imaginable, as you mentioned, Libya and then the rat line, Hirsch, as he calls it, the rat line from Libya to Syria. And if what Bush did for Osama bin Laden's movement was take them from 0 to 10 million miles an hour by giving them all of Western Iraq, which he did at least for a time, then Obama took them far past the speed of light by outright taking their side in Libya and Syria. And the only reason he got away with what is technically high treason in backing the al-Nusra Front the way he has and with our allies is that all the Republicans are even worse and demand even worse treason on behalf of al-Qaeda out of him. And so there's no threat of punishment against him. But,
well,
and it's the
know,
same thing with the French. You know, Eric Margolies first reported that French special forces were helping the jihadists in Syria in the summer of 2011. We've known they're the ones, just like America, reaping this whirlwind, pretending they're on the side fighting against the terrorists when they've been backing the terrorists the whole damn time. But now we're out of time. We'll be right back in 3 minutes with Con Hallinan. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Talking with Con Hallinan from Foreign Policy in Focus. The Saudis are stumbling is his most recent piece. We're running it also at antiwar.com, original.antiwar.com/Hallinan. We got to deal with the FPIF. Run them if we want to. Very interesting article. But before we get back to the Saudis here, well, and this is a great segue into the subject of the Saudis, but we were at the hard break. So I will now give you an opportunity, Con, to rein in my hyperbole, if you wish.
That's all right. It doesn't matter with your hyperbole. It's fine. I mean,
am I wrong?
What you were saying is that you know, that this is a case in which essentially a lot of Western powers, including France, have been deeply involved in destabilizing countries in the Middle East, and there are consequences for that. And this is one of the consequences for that. It doesn't forgive what it is. You have no right, you know, to go around and kill a bunch of innocent people. That's absolutely outrageous. But the thing is that it's a hard argument to make in the Middle East because they turn around and say, what are you talking about? You know, there would have been hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis and Syrians and Libyans and Somalians and Yemenis and Yemenis and things like that killed by Western coalition, and you get terribly upset when this happens in Paris. Well,
right.
You know, this is what happens. It's why you don't do these kinds of things, why you don't take this sort of military approach to resolving what is, in essence, a political problem.
Hey, did you see in the German papers yesterday where, DW.com or where I think it is, Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and Hezbollah all came out and condemned the Paris attacks. So,
of course,
it's not just the moderates; it's even, you know, the names that are the definitions of Islamic extremist terrorism.
Right.
In the world,
and of course,
all came out and condemned it.
You know, Hezbollah. Hezbollah is an organization with deep roots in Lebanon. It represents the Shiite population, which makes up a plurality of Lebanon, but has been, for the last several hundred years, has been completely marginalized politically and economically. And Hezbollah was an effort to organize that community to resist the Israeli occupation of southern Lebanon. So, you know, we talk about the Hezbollah as an extremist organization. It's not an extremist organization. I mean, it represents, you know, huge numbers of Shiites in Lebanon. Does it have an armed wing? Yeah, just like we do. You know, we call it the U.S. Armed Forces. Hezbollah calls it their militia. Hamas is the same way. I don't like their politics. I don't like that kind of a mixture of civil policy with religious policy. But frankly, Hamas is not an extremist organization. It's nothing like Al-Qaeda. It's nothing like the Islamic State. And right now, we're working very closely. In fact, we are condemning the Russians for bombing the Conquest Army in Syria. The Conquest Army is run by Al-Qaeda. These are the same people that took down the Twin Towers.
Well, and it's funded by, it's the alliance between them and Iran al-Sham, which is the Saudis.
Exactly. And you know, when you look at it, when you take a look at the Saudis, what they have done is to essentially finance extremist and terrorist organizations all the way across the world, into Indonesia, into Afghanistan, Central Asia, etc. They also underwrote Saddam Hussein's invasion of Iran, which began the bloodletting between Sunnis and Shiites. I mean, that was started by the Saudis. You know, they funded the extremists in Syria. They helped the government of the military in Egypt overthrow the elected government in Egypt. You know, they have used their money to push particularly reactionary brand of Islam, and their politics, which are by definition, they're monarchies. I mean, it's the opposite of democracy, to push those politics all over the world. And they're our major allies. I mean, we're supporting them in the war in Yemen, and the war in Yemen is an absolute criminal operation. I mean, it's just, you know, nobody's talking about Yemen, but there are right now 80% of the people in Yemen are stressed with hunger and lack of medicine. You know, Yemen imports 70% of its foodstuffs. They can't import anything because the Saudis, along with the United States, have the entire country blockaded by sea. They're carrying out massive bombings. The Saudis, also a number of other Gulf monarchies as well. Those bombings are directed by the United States. We're giving them the intelligence. We're supplying them in-air refueling. We're supplying them weaponry, etc. For what is essentially a civil war between a group of people called the Houthis, who make up a third of the country, and a whole mélange of people, including the Islamic Front. In fact, the Houthis are the most effective force fighting the Islamic Front, and we're bombing we're helping the Saudis bomb the Houthis. So you want to say we have an incoherent foreign policy? That would be a compliment.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark Perry said on the show that the generals at the Pentagon have said to him that, you know, John McCain wants to complain about flying as Iran's air force in Iraq. Fair enough, but they've got us flying as Al-Qaeda's air force in Yemen. And, of course, they're doing it. They're clicking their heels and dropping the bombs instead of resigning en masse over it. But still, as you say, and by the way, the CIA is still doing drone strikes against AQAP targets at the same time they're flying as their air force. So.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, well, the craziest thing is here in the case of Syria, our allies, our big allies are the Kurds, Syrian Kurds. Okay, we have put 50 special forces, we admit to 50 special forces, amongst those Kurds to help them coordinate air activity to bomb, to fight the Islamic Front, okay? And we're flying airplanes out of Turkey to bomb the Islamic Front that the Kurds are fighting. The Turks are using those same airports to fly their planes to bomb the Kurds. So, if you want, I mean, if it wasn't that people are getting killed, this would be something that Lewis Carroll could not have dreamed up. I mean, this is straight out of the looking glass.
Yep. That's pretty sick. And then, okay, so now obviously everyone is saying, next, we just got to bomb them more. That,
well,
and maybe even
yeah.
put in ground troops. And you know what I got to say? Maybe I said this to you back a year and a half ago. I said to everybody before the fall of Mosul that, look, everybody knows that all of Western Iraq is completely lawless and outside of the control of Baghdad. And it's only a matter of time before the Islamic State goes from a group to a place, you know, and then next stage of dominoes to fall down. Obviously, they're going to have to roust him out of Mosul. Are they really going to let Osama bin Laden incarnate call himself the caliph and stay in power in Raqqa or in Mosul, whichever is their, you know, more their capital, supposedly, of their caliphate, and not just have an Islamic State, but a declared caliphate? It's got to be just a matter of time before they send in the Marines. And I'm happy to say it's been a lot longer than I thought it would take, but as you say, the Turks ain't going to do it. Turks like ISIS just fine, hate their enemies much more.
Sure.
They're not going to do it. The Iranians, it would take their entire army to invade, and then that'd be counterproductive in all of its own ways, and they don't seem to be willing to do that. They can hold the line at Shiistan. They never wanted the Iranians or their puppets in Iraq, never wanted to rule Mosul, Fallujah, Ramadi, right? So.
No.
So
no,
who's going to do it other than the
and,
entire American U.S. Army, 3rd Infantry Division, 2003 all over again? Or tell me what's going to happen.
Well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, Scott, but I do think it was something interesting. Yesterday, during the weekend, there were these meetings that involved the nations to talk about the situation in Syria. And what was interesting is that there is a peace proposal beginning to come out that's beginning to form. The sort of catching point is that the Saudis and the Turks still insist on the fact that Assad has to resign first before there's any peace agreement. And everybody else is saying, no, that's crazy. That's not going to happen. And so the war is going to continue. And for the first time, the European Union has kind of stepped in here. And they've just said, look, we've got a million people headed our direction. We're going to have 11 million people if we don't watch out. We have to get a resolution of this thing. The question of whether Assad stays or Assad goes is really not that important. Let's get this settled. Let's see if we can't get a unity government. Let's see if we can get a constitution, elections, ceasefire, etc. Now, I don't know whether that's going to happen, Scott, but this is the furthest along this has come. And largely it's because when the Russians intervened, because the Iranians told them that they thought Damascus was going to fall and that the Assad government was going to collapse and that then the IS or Al-Qaeda was going to take over. And so the Russians came in and they essentially stabilized the situation. They made it they firmed up Damascus, they firmed up the Assad government, they did some military stuff in the north, made some gains, and they absolutely prevented the formation of a no-fly zone, which would have been an enormous plus for Al-Qaeda and the like, because it would have given them a safe haven. Well, now you can't do it because you're going to be fighting Russian airplanes, and nobody wants to do that except if you're running for president of the United States.
Yeah.
and so what you've got is you've got a stabilized situation here now. It's really fully a stalemate. And I think that the role that the Europeans are playing in this, or can play in this anyhow, is very, very important. And there's very much a feeling in Europe that the situation around the Ukraine, the hostility to the Russians, has really gone too far. The president of the European Union, actually the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, said a couple of weeks ago, he said, quote, we must make efforts toward a practical relationship with Russia. We can't go on like this. We cannot have our relationship toward Russia dictated by Washington. It's simply not on. Well, that's really a break. And that break, the attack on Paris, just might get people to say, okay, wait a minute, we need a ceasefire. We need to see if we can't settle this situation in Syria. I hope that happens, Scott. It could the opposite happen? Yes, it absolutely could happen. I mean, you're right. There will be pressure to send troops now into Syria. You can't send troops into Syria. It would be a violation of international law. You know, they can only go in if the Syrians invited them. So we're going to violate international law. Who's going to do it?
Well, I mean, what they would do, I think more likely they'd send troops into Iraq at the forced invitation of the Shiistan government in Baghdad, and then they just back the Assad government, help the Russians with air power in backing Assad. But
that's a big ship
of state to try to turn around, and they haven't been able to turn the whole thing around in a year and a half from overthrowing Assad to backing him against his enemies. So it's sort of like the Yemen policy again, only in a little bit bigger geographical area.
Yeah. I mean, it is, and the situation in Yemen has to be resolved too. And I don't know what I don't know. You know, that's dropped off the radar screen. I mean, we've just the United States likes to talk about these great humanitarian crises and the necessity to intervene in order to protect. In the case of a great humanitarian crisis, well, right now, the second greatest humanitarian crisis on the planet right now is in Yemen, and we're aiding it. We're part of the problem in Yemen. We're not part of the solution. And I don't know how that's going to end. I do know that one of the reasons I wrote the piece about Saudi Arabia is that Saudi Arabia has got itself in a pickle. They're overextended. They thought that the Yemen war would be a quickie. Well, it's not, and why they ever thought it would be. I mean, there are sort of three countries in the world that you cannot invade: Afghanistan, Iraq, and Yemen. And the reason is because there's no one single player in any of those countries that can dominate the other ones. There has to be a kind of agreement between everybody. It's shared power. That's the only way it can work.
Hey, that's a great argument for the Articles of Confederation here, if you ask me, Colin.
Anyhow, so there you are. And so they're in Yemen. They're in a quagmire in Yemen. They're in a stalemate in Syria. Oil is now $44 a barrel. Last year in June, it was $115 a barrel. For the first time, the Saudis are actually borrowing money in order to deal with their budget deficit. They can't afford to spend less money internally because they're keeping the lid on things internally. And they're stuck. I mean, this is a very fragile situation. And this new leadership is crazy. I would say that it is not at all unlikely that sometime in the next few years, we're going to see a major upheaval in Saudi Arabia. And when that happens, boy, that's going to have international repercussions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in fact, as long as I'm keeping you over time, if you give me one more minute.
Sure.
So I'm saying to Robert A. Pape half an hour ago or so, an hour ago, hey, Bob, what if we just quit? Man, this is stupid. We're going to hire the Bushes and Obamas and Clintons and other Bushes who got us into this mess in order to fix it with one last real good intervention. You know, we just can't. How about just quit? The opposite of that. And he's saying, no, man, we got to walk this tightrope line and engage in the least way possible in order to ultimately protect that supply of oil. And he said he's not talking about for cheap prices for Americans. And he's not even necessarily talking about so that connected Houston companies can make extra profits and that kind of, you know, hanky panky sort of thing. He's saying the world's economy needs that oil to go to market every day, all of it. And I didn't really debate it too much with him because we moved on. But I think he was, you know, implicitly sort of acknowledging that, you know, the Americans, we're not wholly dependent on Gulf oil. We mostly rely on West African and Venezuelan and Canadian oil plus our own and that kind of thing. But everybody else does, and it's a global oil price and that kind of thing. And he's basically saying there must not be chaos in the Gulf. There must not be the chaos you just implied, a revolution in Saudi, an end of, stable oil production and export from that regime. And he said the consequences get real. The consequences are we would suffer the kind of economic catastrophe that, you know, on the level of the Great Depression, which would lead to the kind of radical politics in this country that we haven't seen since the 1930s, when people really were signing up with the fascists and the communists, not just calling each other those names, but really joining up in large numbers with those kinds of movements. And so what about that, Con? Is he wrong?
Well, you know.
I mean, and that's my paraphrase of him, so I'm sorry. Do you think that's right?
What he's talking about the Carter Doctrine, 1979, which essentially says the United States has the right to use military force if its supply of energy or the supply of energy for its allies is threatened by anything in the Middle East. That's the Carter Doctrine, okay? Actually, it was made up over Yemen, by the way. Well, the point about it is that we're making things worse. I mean, you can say we have to walk this line, but look at where this line has got us. This line has got us to overthrow the Gaddafi regime, to overthrow us, to invade Iraq, to get involved in the Syrian civil war. This is the line. I mean, that's working without a net. I don't think people say, well, you know, Middle East oil, you know, the world economy would collapse. There can be upheaval in the Middle East without a reduction of oil. All of those countries need oil revenues in order to continue. Even if there was a massive change in Saudi Arabia, they still have to sell that oil. They don't have any other income. They can't sell sand. So what are they going to do? They're going to sell oil.
You know what? Honestly, Michael Scheuer has quoted Bin Laden himself saying, what am I going to do? Drink it? Like he was saying, our worst case scenario where he actually becomes the new leader of Saudi or whatever. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? Drink the oil? It's still going to be for sale anyway. He's arguing that you can leave me alone, really. We don't even have to be friends, but the oil's still going to be on the market. Come on.
Well, one thing you can't do is you can't intervene and tell another country what their politics ought to be and who should rule them. You can't do that. You might be able to forcibly do that for a while, but in the long run, that comes to pieces. And that's the choice we have to make here. Are we going to continue to basically say, look, we will do whatever we can to make sure that our people are in charge? Well, we're not that big a country. We no longer have those resources. There are a lot of other poles of power out there that are developing. We simply can't run the world anymore. And so we're going to have to figure out how do you make everybody get along together. And the first place you start is you stop punching them.
Sounds
you punch someone, they're going
to
punch you back. And even if they can't punch you back, they're going to remember it. You know, in that sense, the whole world is Irish. That we never forget a slight.
That's a good way to put it. All right, y'all, that is Con Hallinan. He writes at Foreign Policy in Focus. You can see why it's a good idea to read him. He's also republished at antiwar.com, original.antiwar.com/Hallinan. And the latest is The Saudis Are Stumbling. Thanks again, Con.
Okay, thanks for having me, Scott.